runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 44 with guest Scott Kvitan, recorded Friday, February 8th, 2008. Run As Radio is brought to you each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and with me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
That's me. Hey, everybody. How are you today, Richard?
Things are really good and been pretty peaceful, knocking out a lot of shows these days. Windows 2008 server, RTM'd, exciting stuff.
Coming very, very soon to a shelf near you.
Yes.
Some people can download it.
And I'm mostly interested in their virtualization technology, but I've heard that Hyper-V is like pushed out for a few more months.
Yeah, not coming yet. I think maybe we learned that during one of the interviews we did at TechEd USA, or one of the similar interviews we did, that it was going to be coming after the fact. But boy, that's going to be cool when it does come.
Speaking of TechEd US, things are starting to come together now. You know, it's going to be over 2 weeks, and I'm going to be at both, because I'm going to be doing .NET Rocks for the first week and then Run As Radio for the second week.
Right, similar to the Europe style of having a dev forum and an IT forum week.
Absolutely, but the stage is going to be back. The virtual TechEd stage and the fishbowl, all that stuff's going to be at TechEd US both weeks, and we'll be there.
Yeah, great.
And if there's some specific shows you want to see or topics we're not covering, send us an email, info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Scott Kvitan is a digital identity promoter and open source advocate. Scott has worked at Amazon, Rulespace.com, and Janrain, as well as founding the Open Source Lab at Oregon State University. Working closely with projects like Mozilla, Linux, Drupal, and Apache led Scott down the identity path and to Janrain in mid-2006. Scott was named to Red Herring's list of 25 Titans in Waiting in early 2007. Scott speaks publicly about identity and open source, is an avid gardener, and is also internet ordained, performing weddings for family and friends.
Internet
ordained?
Ordained.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Decided you needed to be able to perform weddings.
No, it was actually, you know, it was the godfather of my son. My three-year-old son was getting married, and we just, he actually was the one who came up with the name of my son, Jivio. And, you know, he just said, yeah, we're getting married, and we were really excited, and they were good friends of ours, and I said, geez, wouldn't it be cool if I could do it? And you know, sort of like, ha, 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 and then, you know, I went on the internet, and 10 minutes later, I was ordained. I was like, geez, we could actually do this. And I'm 5 for 5 so far. We've got 5 weddings I've done, and then everybody's still together.
So good news. That's an enviable track record. I'll check in a couple of years, see how you're doing.
Yeah.
We could do 30 minutes on just that. I'm sure there's some stories to tell. That's cool.
I think we're very timely because OpenID is such a huge topic right now. I mean, it's been going on for a while, and I've certainly been keeping an eye on it. But we should dive in. A half hour, I don't think we could even go close to doing it justice.
Oh, I think we can cover a lot in 30 minutes. I'm excited.
Let's start at the beginning. What's the deal with OpenID?
Sure. So OpenID started about almost 3 years ago with Brad Fitzpatrick from LiveJournal. And he was looking for a solution to a problem that we've all encountered, which is I have too many usernames and passwords. And he came up with actually a really simple idea and a way of doing it. He implemented it and put it out there. And it wasn't perfect. It was had some security implications. It didn't do everything that people wanted it to do. There were a lot of problems with it, but the difference was he put something out there, he led with code, and he enabled 10 million users. Well, when he enabled LiveJournal, there were 10 million users at the time, and they all had OpenIDs. Well, that sort of piqued the interest of a lot of people who've been playing around in this space for a while, and slowly but surely, more and more people got involved, and more code got written, and a lot of folks sort of not only in the identity community, people who've been working on digital identity for years, but also just in general because a lot of big vendors have been interested in a solution like this. And they all came together around OpenID, and it's taken us, you know, a good 3 years, close to 3 years. But we've covered a lot of ground, and just this week, just yesterday actually, we announced Google, Microsoft, IBM, Yahoo and VeriSign joining the OpenID Foundation as board members. So for us, it's been a real validation of the hard work that we've all put in over the last 2.5-3 years.
Wow.
So that's sort of the basis of OpenID. I mean, sort of like the history of the thing. But from a why do I care about this technology standpoint, it solves the I want one username and password for all the different sites that I go to. And it's a very, very simple technology. Your OpenID is actually a domain name. So in my case, it's, scott.kavitin.com, or I also use kavitin.myvidoop.com. And what's interesting about using DNS for this is that, namespace is always a big issue on the internet. And Brad chose to use DNS because ICANN existed. There was a governing body that dealt with those things. And we found other folks who've tried to create sort of new namespaces. You run into that, there's gold over there in those namespace, kind of issues. And people, land rush and they try and grab all these names and it really just doesn't fit. And the other piece is that they're unique. Every domain name is unique. You solve another problem there. And then finally, what's really interesting, and I think it's going to be the driver for OpenID in 08, is your OpenID is an endpoint. Now, as, my mom or my grandma or my sister or whatever, they're not going to care about that. But from a developer standpoint, a user can prove that there's some service endpoint on the internet. And then from there, you can land services. So, hey, I want their friend list. I want their contact information. All with their permission, of course. I want their preferences or their tastes, anything. You can land there. And we haven't had the ability to do that in a real decentralized fashion. And I think OpenID is going to be the building block for making that happen.
It's an interesting thought that suddenly the whole internet is your social networking space.
Yeah. So let's be honest here. In my opinion, I've been saying this for a while, but social networking is not something you do. It's not a function of a site. It's a feature of a site. The problem is every time you go to a new site, you have to recreate your social network.
Right.
Well, if I have a unique identifier, that's me, my OpenID, and then all my friends do, and I've created a list of those, my friends, my family, my coworkers, whatever, I should now be able to go into a site, log in, and it should just be able to say, hey, we know that you have these friends, and guess what? Here's all the people who are on this site right now. Great. That's how it should be. It shouldn't be you go to a site to do social networking. It's strange. And I actually think in a couple of years, people will sort of laugh at the concept of social networking as a function of a site.
Yeah, it does seem strange now, doesn't it?
I think it's strange, but then again, I do it all the time. So,
what does OpenID mean, or maybe it doesn't mean anything? But give us maybe a vision or even some practical examples from, we have a lot of IT people that listen to our show that work in businesses. How do you see OpenID impacting business in the future?
Great. Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. So a lot of companies are trying to figure out how they can save money, obviously, right? And we see a lot of open source tools being deployed, behind the firewall. And although OpenID is in its truest sense is an open, DNS is external and anybody can query DNS and things like that, you could still spin up an OpenID provider behind your corporate firewall. Well, why would you want to do that? Why would you care? Well, there's a lot of open source packages out there now, content management systems, CRM, bug tracking, lots of different tools that actually already support OpenID, and a lot of enterprises already have directories. So if I have my directory in Active Directory or LDAP or whatever, I could very easily expose those as OpenIDs and then automatically be able to log into, Drupal or Bugzilla or whatever that I'm using behind my corporate firewall. So you're really able to, extend your directory into new ways and be able to deploy new pieces of software without having to sort of reinvent the wheel and figure out how you're going to do accounting or hook in your directory, which can be pretty painful. So I think from an IT perspective, I'd be really excited about OpenID because it's going to allow ease of new tools, use of new tools.
So what does it look like? I mean, from a practical standpoint, obviously this is an audio show. Maybe you can describe from a usability standpoint, how does this actually work?
Sure. It is actually quite tough to do via voice. It actually is really handy with them. There's actually a great, how does OpenID work on YouTube that the Vidoop folks did. And I work for Vidoop, so, it is a shameless plug, but it's actually quite good. It's a whiteboard and so if you want to see the visualization of what I'm going to describe, that's the place to go check it out. So as a user, I go to a site to log in, and there's an OpenID login form there. and I enter in my OpenID, which in my case is kaviten.myvidoop.com. Now I click go, and what happens is the site then redirects me over to my identity provider, which is myvidoop.com, to authenticate. And once I've authenticated there, the site that has requested my login credentials can ask for some really basic information like, hey, we'd like your full name, your last name, maybe a preferred nickname or an email address. And the user is prompted with a nice dialogue that says, you know, I will allow this or I won't. They click OK, let's say they want to allow it, and then they're redirected back to the site. They're logged in and all their information has come across that they've allowed to come across. So this is a really, really handy thing. What's really interesting is if I'm already logged into my identity provider, in other words, if I you know, lit up my browser in the morning and logged into myvidoop.com, I'm logged in sort of for the day. And now as I go to other sites to log in with my OpenID, I don't have to re-authenticate because I've already entered my password once on my identity provider. And there's all kinds of really interesting things about being able to also manage your data from that identity provider. So let's say I go back to a site I haven't been at in 6 months, and maybe I moved and my zip code has changed. Well, it'll prompt me and say, hey, it looks like you have an old zip code over here. Would you like us to update that? Because we noticed that it's different. And you can say, yes, that sounds great. And this solves a problem that we see with sort of, you know, information aging on all the different sites that you sign up. You know, I think on Yahoo, I'm still listed as living in Seattle, and I haven't lived in Seattle since 1999. But, like, it hasn't been an easy mechanism for me to go and change that, and I always forget, and I always mention it during interviews like this, and then I never go back and change it. Anyways, so it's, you know, it's a really simple tool. It's a really basic building block, but I think it's a very important one. Does that make sense? And I really recommend the video. I can't recommend that more because it's just such a nice, really explains it, especially if you're a developer or you know, an IT person who wants to understand the flow of things. It's good to see it in front of a whiteboard.
I get the idea that, you know, myopenid.com and openid.org and so forth can host my OpenID entity there. What does it take for me to run one myself?
You know, it takes the domain name and it takes some software, plenty of which is out there. Drupal, which is an open source content management system, actually has an OpenID provider and consumer module. So you can not only provide OpenIDs from your Drupal installation, you can also consume them. So somebody from Yahoo or AOL or MyVidoop or whatever can come over and log in and use their OpenID on your site. So it's very basic. And this is one of the really powerful things about this, and I think one of the reasons why it's deployed so quickly and, you know, has grown, you know, sort of through this viral adoption. The real tech heads have been able to spin up their own domains and run their own servers, you know, behind their DSL line at their own house. The reality is, you know, the majority of users won't want to do that. They just, like, the majority of users don't run their own email. They go to Yahoo or Google or other providers to get that done.
What do you see as the story in terms of trust? I mean, I've spent the last couple of years of my career, a few years, you know, trying to keep bad guys out of online banking sites through, you know, fancy authentication methods and whatnot. OpenID is interesting from a single sign-on perspective, right? Even if an institution has multiple 30 or 40 different systems that maybe they don't have a single sign-on provider, is this something that, from a technology and security standpoint, might be viable now or in the future for maybe a financial institution to use to identify their users?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key is, you know, we have to realize that we're putting more and more important data out on the internet. And when you look at corporate grade security, you know, you have RSA tokens, you have smart cards, you name it. And right. Now we have Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, you know, wanting all of our data. And hey, let's put our health records out there. Hey, let's put, you know, all these different things out there. And yet we're still, you know, required to use just a password, username and password.
Sure.
And so some of the paradigm is shifting that we need to find better ways to protect this stuff. So, you know, whether it's second factor authentication with a phone, we see a lot of that in Europe with banking sites.
Right.
You know, we're going to have to see something change here. And even some of the bigger players are starting to realize this as well. When you look at, like, Yahoo's sign-in deal or SiteKey from VeriSign, those kinds of things.
Well, and I find it interesting the idea that now I'm separating my identity from the site I'm trying to use.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's interesting. It's, you know, security is best done in layers. And the more layers you can add in there, the better. The key is, you know, I don't want to have to jump through a bunch of different hoops for every single site that I go to, right? You know, I don't want to do an SMS, you know, verification or carry a smart card because I'm going to Yahoo and then a different one for AOL. And what's interesting about OpenID is I can lock down, you know, one of my identities, my one account that I use everywhere that I go. I can, you know, put some extra hoops in that. And I don't mind doing that because maybe at the beginning of the day I only have to do it once, or maybe I've registered my computer in some special way so that it knows who I am, and when I log in from that computer, I'm good to go. But if I use a different computer, I have to jump through those hoops again. Well, I can still log into all those other sites and not have to worry about jumping through those same hoops again. So, you know, having all that sort of your identity in one place and being able to really lock that up well is a good thing, I think. One of the things that we hear a lot from folks who are, you know, sort of critics of the technology are, well, wait a minute, now I have all my eggs in one basket. If somebody gets to my one account, you know, you've got everything. You're into everything that I do. Right. And I would argue that we're already in that space today. If I got access to your Gmail account, the odds are I could go to all the different sites and request your password and have it sent over to your Gmail account. And guess what? I'd log in as you on all those accounts.
Sure.
Or, you know, a lot of users just have the same username that they use because they found some unique, you know, nickname that they can use all over the internet, and they use that, and then they use one password on all those sites.
Right.
To make it easy for themselves. So I actually think that we're better off because we get the single sign-on functionality and no different in terms of security.
Well, I know I've seen Kim Cameron, for example, over at Microsoft has certainly talked a lot about OpenID and also about, you know, their card space initiative. How do those things fit together? Are they the same thing competing? Are they really complementary to each other? What's your view?
So we started talking with Kim probably, it would have been almost a year ago now. It was January that we first started chatting in 2007. And, you know, we looked at the difference between OpenID and card space, and CardSpace and Microsoft, you know, they really have a requirement to make sure they look out for the end user security, you know, without a doubt, without any consideration whatsoever. And they have baked this CardSpace into into Windows Vista. And it's actually a really solid piece of technology. The problem is, for them, they're realizing that the internet is becoming this very public place. And so you have a private persona, which is all the things that you really want to keep secure and private to yourself. But then you have this public persona. And CardSpace wasn't really good for the public persona. So then enter OpenID. OpenID is really, really good for the public pieces that you want to do, but could stand to have, you know, some better security from the private side of things. So, you know, this is why we see folks, you know, adding multi-factor authentication and really wanting to lock this down.
Right.
Or, better yet, why not just use CardSpace to lock down the OpenID and then have the OpenID do the public side of things? So really, really complementary in the way that the two work together. And this speaks to the fact that OpenID is this endpoint, is this URL that you might want to prove that you own and then get services from based on the authentication that the user did. You can't do that with a card and with CardSpace. It's not a destination on the internet, and that's not how it was architected. So the two pull together so nicely. Basically, what they've done, we've been working with Microsoft on how you would basically embed an OpenID inside the card that you assert. So now you can go to a site, prove who you are via CardSpace, and along with it, you'll pass an OpenID that is a public endpoint that users have proved they own. And they can now get and manage services through that.
So in a way, having a machine with that card on there is almost presenting a second factor of authentication on your OpenID.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So obviously, there's been some very big news recently. I'm trying to figure out exactly what it means. It almost seems like everybody just sort of stormed on and said, "Okay, we're going to do this," but I still not get a sense of what, you know, the Googles and the IBMs and the Microsoft are actually going to do as far as using OpenID.
Sure. Well, so this has been a long time coming. We've been having these conversations for close to a year now with these organizations, and they have all agreed that the ideas behind OpenID and the technology itself is something that they all need to have. And Microsoft learned the hard way with Passport that no one company can own it. they learned a lot of hard lessons with that. And actually, those are the things that we took away to help create OpenID. And so I'm actually really excited to have Microsoft participating because they've actually been just fantastic in this thing. And over the last year, we've been working on, you know, sorting out the IP, who has contributed what, how the IP and contributions will work in the future, really kind of working through the mechanics. And quite honestly, it's pretty boring stuff. You know, it's a lot of, you know, all caps could and should and would and those kinds of things. but it's very important. It's that the framework that helps this community really move forward. In terms of what, you know, what it means for these companies to join, well, you know, speaking as a member of the OpenID Foundation board, I think it really, enables us and will help this community move forward and really validate the work that we've done and say that, hey, OpenID is a technology that you can trust. And OpenID is a technology that is going to be powering the internet over the coming years. And, you know, that's symbolic in and of itself. But the work that we're going to be engaging in among the committees and work groups to help, build new extensions to OpenID and extend the technology, that's going to be the really exciting stuff because your OpenID is this endpoint and it's going to be a choke point, I think, for users to control and manage their data and their, you know, digital identities. So we've built this great forum. We've got an awesome group of people involved, and I'm really excited about the work that's going to be happening over the next, you know, couple of years.
Yeah, on one hand, I think this is such a grassroots movement. It can carry itself forward. And now, and I got to wonder if bringing the big companies in actually complicates matters. You know,
Well, we've reached a certain point, honestly, where we have to manage our trademark. You know, we have to deal with IP and what it means to have copyright across, you know, in Asia and Europe and other places.
Yeah.
And those are things that are, you know, a community traditionally has a difficult time doing with, especially if you're talking about on a volunteer basis. I mean, that just a lot of those are lawyer time.
Yeah.
And when we had these board members join, they join not only with themselves, but also with their pocketbooks to help drive a sustainable organization that will continue through time to be able to manage and help this community thrive. So it's more than just symbolic. It's not like some of the other things we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks around like the dataportability.org stuff. This is real people who've been working towards a goal and putting their money where their mouth is. And I think that's really important to mention.
Well, and there is an interesting angle on this that you hit a certain point in that sort of open source model where now we must spend some money to formalize things and stabilize things and mature things. And these guys have got the money.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we struck a really good balance, I think. The foundation isn't in charge of the technology. In other words, the board doesn't dictate how the technology is created. The board simply dictates the mechanics of how the community operates. And the community are the ones who develop and decide how the technology is going to go. So there's a whole bunch of, you know, technically minded, really smart community members who are driving the technology forward. And now these companies will also have individuals that will participate as well, but they'll have a vote just like, you know, everybody else who's participating. So, you know, it's a really interesting model, and I've seen it succeed, you know, time and again. And we're really, really excited about what this is going to mean, you know, for the open web, really.
So now I got to imagine going forward here. As an IT guy, my time is precious. I'm busy, 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 busy. If I look at, IBM and Microsoft and so forth are now involved, I'm wondering if I can stop worrying so much about OpenID because it's just going to be incorporated into the products that I'm going to be deploying.
You know, that could be. That would be fantastic. I mean, I know for a fact there's quite a few companies who sell technologies that enable you to deploy OpenID, you know, in the enterprise or otherwise. And if Microsoft, just enables it along with, you know, their server technologies, then, hey, that's fantastic, right? The more the merrier. And for us, we're just excited to see all these folks jump in. And it's going to be really good for OpenID. It's going to be great for the marketplace. And I think we're going to see some, you know, really exciting things happen around social networking and what it means to manage and control your data over the next couple of years.
So is the key work going forward here really about the developers incorporating OpenID authentication into their apps now, that all websites will use this identifier and,
yeah,
and various applications?
Yeah, I think we'll see some of that. I think there'll be some general marketing and evangelism that we'll see come out of the foundation. I think you know, we'll continue to do the grassroots stuff that we do. David Recordon and I, David's one of the other board members of the OpenID Foundation and has been around, you know, playing with this stuff almost as long as Brad. He and I put together a OpenID development camp that we hosted down in the Bay Area. We had about, you know, 40, 45 people show up for it and, you know, just folks hacking on code. And you know, no politics, no talk of boards or any of that stuff. It's just a bunch of developers get together and, you know, solve real problems, and also have real discussions about the implications of this technology, and you know, really good stuff. So we'll continue to see a lot more of those things happening. And I, you know, I'm super bullish about 2008.
Well, I mean, I've really got a sense of I'm looking forward to a battle of the best practices. That as a corporate entity, I really ought to be running my own OpenID server, and we want to be authenticating this way. And here's how these things should relate together. So it doesn't. It sounds like everybody's doing it their way so far. I don't get a sense of a one right way yet.
No, and you know, I don't know if there will be one. You know, one right way, because some people want to have, you know, public, crazy, put everything out there they can, and other people don't want anything out there. So it'll be, you know, we'll have sort of boutique providers that do a little bit of everything or both, you know, and it's all great for the marketplace. You know, the reality is when we look out on, you know, MySpace and Facebook, privacy is definitely a huge consideration. But a lot of users, especially for folks who are from a different generation, have a hard time understanding how much data these kids will disclose.
Right.
And so I think sort of the quote-unquote winner in this game is going to be whoever provides the easiest tools to give users the most control, whether it's, you know, turn it all up to 11 and view the world with everything you got, or crank it all the way down to zero and not. You know, it's got to be this little knob that allows you to do that. And whoever can build that really good knob, I think is gonna succeed.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, any last thoughts as we race into the end of a half hour? Scott, places that folks should be going to find out more about OpenID.
OpenID.net, of course. Just recently went through a revamp in terms of the site. Some really great resources there for developers and users can learn how to get an OpenID, those kinds of things. Some great videos up on YouTube that describe OpenID. Let's see here, what else? Oh, and also the foundation itself is, if you want to join as a member, you can do that as well. Again, just go to openid.net and join as a member. And what that means is you get to participate in the conversations that are happening and also vote on, you know, board members and things that work groups and committees should be doing. And you log in with an OpenID and you vote with your OpenID. So very good stuff.
Brilliant.
For that OpenID video, I think if you search on the web for OpenID according to Dave, then you'll find that YouTube video.
That's the one.
Excellent. Scott Caviten, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your insights into where OpenID is going.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.